Tonight on Arena, we give you our choice of music items on the programme from the past 12 months. Well, I hope you've been enjoying the festivities so far, and despite its being very different from other years, that Christmas has brought you all that you wished for. Ireland has been going through an extraordinarily creative musical phase in recent years, with a diversity that's been something to behold. Folk and traditional music have been undergoing a revival not seen since the 1960s. The enormous success of Fontaine's DC underscores Ireland as, yet again, a country that produces some of the finest punk and post-punk in the world. And there's been an explosion of hip-hop, soul and pop throughout the country, reflecting the diversity of modern Ireland. And here on Arena, we do like to reflect that diversity. We began 2020, as we have done for some years now, collaborating with Temple Bar Tradfest, who back in January, before there was any talk of lockdown, put together a lineup that included a once-off, specially commissioned collaboration from performance poet Stephen James Smith. Stephen brought together Laura Quirk and Claire Kinsella, a duo known as Lemoncello, alongside another duo, the Silken Same, comprising Mossy Nolan and Colm McGann. And they began their Tradfest set for us with I've Had Lovers.
Flames can only extinguish love's feelings burning me up.
Let's not insult each other with kind kisses. Let's tear our hearts or nothing.
I've Had Lovers there from Lemoncello and the Silken Same. Stephen James Smith, you are the person who brought these two bands together, I think, or at least they were given to you to curate a night of music and poetry. What a match.
They're deadly. They're good crack as well. So if you're going to work with people, you want to work with people that are sound and a bit of fun. And backstage, we're always making each other laugh. I'm thankful to the Tradfest for asking me to bring a few people together. And I just thought this would be a good fit.
Yeah, and did you start from the point of view of a number of poets, or is it mostly your own work that you're going to do on the night in the music?
No, I'm going to start the night. I'm going to do a half an hour, and then the Silken Same will do a half an hour, and then Lemoncello will do a half an hour. However, there will be like crossovers where we'll do collaborations together. And in fact, Laura Quirk there from Lemoncello very kindly put the music to that, which is in fact a poem of mine. So I she sent it on to me one day. I was like, oh, I really like that. So that was very grateful. So there'll be more of that in the night as well.
Well, you've kind of answered the question that I wanted to put to Laura in that case. So I was wondering whether that was a Lemoncello song to start out with that you then brought the lads in on. But you actually, you responded directly to one of the poems of Stephen and then did it for the band as is.
Yeah.
The four of you together.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary hearing that actually when it moves from your voice to its column there, isn't it? Yeah. To Colm's voice, it almost becomes a different poem, a different song, doesn't it?
I know, it really brought a new dimension to it when we were rehearsing it the other day and Colm just started singing that verse and I stopped singing because it was just, it was beautiful. He's got such a lovely voice.
It's amazing what happens when somebody goes to make a cup of tea and you're kind of left there and there's a little silence to fill. And you're like, well, I could just stick my head in here and have a little song. So that's kind of... Well, I had heard the melody and I thought it was beautiful and I thought I can put my own voice to that as well. And the contrast between the male and the female, I think kind of works well with the context of the...
Given the way that the two of you work together, this must be the beginning of a beautiful relationship and a beautiful quartet, I'm presuming.
Have you not...
musical relationship and quartet to get everybody out of any trouble, yeah?
Have you not been following us on Twitter and Instagram there, Sean?
No,
because they've made little face, ABBA-esque faces of themselves and there's loads of banter going on amongst them, so I think we've now formed a super group.
Stephen James Smith there alongside Lemoncello and the Silken Same recorded at Dublin Castle in January of this year at Arena's launch of Temple Bar Tradfest. Like any year, 2020 has had its significant anniversaries. In terms of Irish music, one hugely important date was October the 20th, 1980, when a little-known Dublin band called U2 released their first album, Boy. 40 years on, in October 2020, we spoke to the producer of that album, Steve Lillywhite, who shared some fascinating insights into the four teenagers who would go on to conquer the globe. We started the interview off with the opening song from Boy, I Will Follow.
That still sounds fantastic, that track, doesn't it? Wow, what a great, yeah. what a great live feel that we got on those recordings. I'm very proud of the album, mainly because it was the first ever rock album to be successfully recorded in Ireland. Because all up until that time, all the Irish bands had come over to London to make their records, like Thin Lizzy and the Boomtown Rats. Mm. They all moved to London to record. Whereas U2 said that they wanted to record their first album in Dublin. So, you know, when I came to Windmill Lane, I looked around and I have to say, it was not made for recording rock music because the actual studio was absolutely dead. There was nothing lively, nothing exciting about the sound. But every morning when I walked into the studio, I walked through the reception of Windmill Lane, and it was this wonderful sort of stone reception room. So I went to the studio manager and I said, we want to record the drums here. And he looked at me and thought I was smoking crack. And he said, but that's where the receptionist sits. And I say, well, what time does the receptionist go home? And he said, well, she goes home at 6 o'clock. I said, all right, then, well, can we do the drums at 6 o'clock? And he couldn't think of another reason why not. At which point Larry Mullen's dad came into the situation because Larry was only 17 and he had to be home for his tea. So it was all a little bit crazy. But we did set up the drums out at night. By the reception, because a lot of people listening now don't understand this, but back in those days there were no cell phones or anything, so the only way that you could communicate with anyone in the studio or the whole rest of Windmill Lane was through this receptionist, and she would then transfer the calls to the various different places.
Two very important questions jump up at me the minute I hear that. First of all, did Larry go home and get his tea and come back in every night?
No. But his dad came to collect him after he'd finished his drumming because, what are you doing working at night? People don't work at night.
They do their homework. Well, it's what he made me finish.
Yeah, they do. They literally do their homework at night. Yeah. This is what I love, though. When you listen to this album, you can really hear great bass parts, great guitar parts, and great drum parts, and Bono. I mean, but that maybe the singing isn't as good as actually the music. Bono became a great singer, obviously, but I think he was still looking for his voice on the first. I mean, it's very good singing, but you know, it's great guitar playing.
Yeah.
I mean, Edge has always been top of the line.
Steve Lillywhite with some of his memories of producing U2's debut album, Boy, 40 years ago in 1980. On tonight's Arena, we're looking back at some of the musical highlights on the programme over the past year. And now to demonstrate one of the ways Irish music has evolved over the decades since U2's debut album. Dublin rapper J Yellow L is one of the leading lights in a vibrant Irish hip-hop scene. His debut album, Division, was extremely well received by our album reviewers back in November. But earlier, in June, J Yellow L joined me for a chat about preparation for that album. To start off, I took him back to his 2017 single, Cold in the Summer, a song that dealt with racial injustice. I asked J Yellow L whether 3 years on, this was still an important feature of his work.
It is definitely like a very important part of not just the album, but also what I represent as an artist and also as a human. I feel like things have changed, but progress isn't always fast. You know, I mean, in fact, in some cases, it takes a lot of small steps to finally get to the big leap. So I guess ultimately what we've seen over the past few weeks in terms of the racial inequality and racial injustice is a lot more people being aware of what's actually going on. You know, but we've been in the awareness stage for so long. And I think now this is the, we're at the height of the awareness stage where it's time for people to become restless in their inactivity. So everyone is thinking now, what can we do to mobilize against this problem, not just to be aware of it?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the question I want to ask you. What can we do to mobilize against the problem? And I mean here, a kind of cross-community type of support for what you're talking about. And essentially, we're talking about Black Lives Matter when we talk about the last couple of weeks, certainly. Right across the community, what is the way to support people who want to fight against racial inequalities? What's the right support to give?
You know, it's ironic that I said we've been in the awareness stage too long, because I do believe that the right cross-community support that we can get from everyone is that awareness and everyone just being able to have that conversation and educate themselves on issues of on minority issues and take on perspectives from minorities as well. Because from a place of privilege, it's not always easy to recognize your own privilege and others, you know, lack thereof. So I think what we need to do is we need to re-educate ourselves, because it's not just an issue of Black lives. That is what's going on. But around the world, there's so much injustice. And I think discrimination is so deep rooted in humanity, like in just the world today, that we need to actively educate ourselves against it. I don't even know if that's fully possible, but we can tackle one issue at a time.
You have a degree in politics, in fact, Jay, from UCD. Obviously, as you're describing it to me there, there's a very strong set of political bones in your body, and it comes out in your music. Is there another side to that political activism for you? You know, could you see yourself going a more direct route in the political scenario?
You know, I've always been very interested in politics, but I don't know. As of right now, I don't see myself pursuing a career in it, because I'm very focused on my music. But I do believe that you don't actually have to be directly involved in politics to make an impact or make a change. Like, I was looking at what's happened in the UK recently with Marcus Rashford, Manchester United footballer, and just the change he's made there from being a footballer, and the voice, how he's been able to use his platform for such a positive impact. So that's the kind of impact I want to have, as opposed to you know, going doing the rounds around local councils and then, you know, the Dáil and all of that. But yeah, I definitely use my platform.
Yeah, use your music in that respect and use it as a platform to say what you want to say politically. 2019, great year for your two EPs. You were at lots of festivals, in fact, when there were festivals back in 2019, Body and Soul, Longitude, Electric. Yeah, and you were at a jazz festival in Holland as well. Are you missing all of that? How are you managing with lockdown?
Oh, Lord, I am missing it. I can't tell you a lie. I'm missing it a lot. It's burning inside of me. So the next time I'm going to perform, it's going to be the best performance that I've ever done. Yeah. I'm really going to leave everything on the stage. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I think there was so much momentum coming from last year with the festivals and the headline shows and everything. With the album coming as well, I just, you know, it's giving myself and my team a chance to just go back to the drawing board and think, well, what can we do on this side of things as well when everything goes back somewhat normal?
Did you watch, in the words of Norm, and that's picking up on Normal, did you watch Normal People, and how excited were you when you knew that your music was going to be used within it?
Oh, no, I was very excited. Reason being, Oh Lord is a track that I actually made 2 years ago with my friend, my good collaborator, Aaron Unknown. So it was very exciting to see that 2 years on, it could still be given a chance to make that kind of cultural impact on a show that is very culturally impactful itself, you know. So yeah, I was definitely very excited.
So did the show work for you, Normal People? Was it good in your mind?
I haven't actually finished watching it. To be honest with you, selfishly, I watched the episode, see where my song was being placed first, and then I went backwards.
All right.
But but yeah, it's definitely been interesting so far. I find the characters very interesting.
Terribly honest of you to say all of that on air, that you, many people would do that. Let's see where my bit is and then I'll go back and check the rest out.
Yeah, let's be real.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jay, lovely to speak with you this evening. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. And let's finish up by playing then that track that was used on, that song that was used on the soundtrack for Normal People. Oh, Lord.
Hey, what you telling me, dog? They can't contend with these bars. They hit the pen and get hedged. I hit my pen and recharge. Come at the pen and get lame. I hit my penalties hard. Got in Penelope's head. Now I'm in Penelope's yard. Oh, Lord, oh, Lord. I guess I'll never meet God. I've tried to stay away from them. They've been compelling me hard. I saw Melanie roast the men. Now I'm with Melanie Mart. I get to hit with some head. And that's why I'm mentally scarred. Entering my next chapter while I'm vibing out. Got the X factor to tell Simon that my
Dublin rapper, J.L.O.L. with the track, Oh, Lord. We'll be back after this break, continuing our look at the best music we featured on Arena throughout 2020. Looking at some of the best music featured on the show this year. As we near the end of 2020, we've all become accustomed to the idea of concerts being performed online, streamed to our homes, and for the most part performed in front of empty seats in venues around the country. Back in May and June, this was a relatively new concept, and it was against this backdrop that acclaimed singer-songwriter Lisa O'Neill joined us for another Arena session. Her performance in Studio 8 came ahead of a gig she was about to do at the National Concert Hall in a series called Reflections, and she wasn't shy about telling us how odd she felt about performing to an empty room.
It's going to be strange. I haven't done any of these Zoom concerts or anything like that, you know, because it's just fair play to anyone who's doing it. But for me to pretend that there's somebody there listening to me, even if they, you know, they are somewhere up there in the cyber world listening to me, I'm not receiving it. And so it feels like maybe a conversation with the wall. So I'm going to have to try find a way of working that out in my head. Maybe the cameraman can be my audience. But I do need to speak to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I'm speaking to you now, Sean. I can see you. You're real. I feel that my ideas aren't real if I don't see them. If I don't observe them being received and understood.
And so if you're recording an album in studio, then are the engineers and the people working around you, they're your audience, are they?
Yes, and my muses, who I might have had in mind when I was writing the songs. But they're always there, and maybe that's who I need to bring into the concert hall with me.
But I'm guessing that the final song that you're going to perform for us this evening, Lisa, is about one of those muses, a woman called Mary Harris, also known as Mother Jones. Tell me a little bit about her.
Amazing woman, and I only discovered her recently myself through a documentary that RTE made called Her Story. But Mother Jones was an incredible woman, born in the 1830s in Cork, and her family emigrated to Toronto in and around the Great Famine. It's very hard to brief this because it's a massive, massive story, and it's very hard to brief it in a song. So my song basically is an introduction to this woman's life. It's very fact-based. But she knew hardship, and she lost her four children and her husband, George Jones, who was also an activist, who she loved dearly. She lost them to the yellow fever. And she describes in her book washing down their bodies and wrapping them up for burial all on her own. She did okay a little bit after that. She went and opened up a dressmaking company in Chicago with another Irish woman, making fancy dresses for the well-to-do. But the whole time she was just heartbroken looking at the poor people on the street and the working class and the conditions that they were living in. Chicago went on fire one summer. She lost everything again. And then she joined a union. And she was a powerful woman. She made her way around the mines of America and dragged the men out of the mines and said, "We're going on strike. I'm going to show you how to go on strike. We need to fight for the 8-hour working day. You have rights. You're entitled to your rights." And one of the big things that she had a huge hand in was the abolition of child labour in America. I mean, that's massive. They were sending little children who were small enough to go down tiny little holes, down trenches, you know?
Yeah.
They mightn't come out of these trenches. Some of them died. It was madness. So she had a huge heart, and she had a great wit. And there was a journalist from the New York Times who was very taken by her, and he followed her around. I mean, the work she did went on for years and years, and he followed her around. And these lines that she came out with during her strikes and her protests were huge. And one of the lines that really stands out to me, and I think is relevant today, and I think that if Mother Jones was alive today, she'd be screaming it. And this line is, pray for the dead and fight like hell for the living.
Yeah.
So out of all the hardship that she went through, the strength she got out of it and the things she did with that, she was known as the most dangerous woman in America. A judge said that to her. Most dangerous woman for having such a big heart, because she moved things. You know, she moved things with her pain and with her sadness and her grief.
Well,
I can't shout enough about her.
Yeah, well, that's why you wrote the song, I guess. And it's a gent. You're not shouting at us like the blackbird and the seagull. You're kind of singing it gently to us, but the fighting words indeed. Fight like hell for the living, from Lisa O'Neill.
Mary lost her home. Mary kept her mind. Not always kind.
Fight Like Hell for the Living, performed for us back in May by Lisa O'Neill. 2020 will also be remembered as the year when festivals across the country were decimated, and many had to find creative ways of reprogramming bookings that had been made months and years in advance. The Kilkenny Arts Festival was no exception. But during the summer, they did manage to stage a concert with the Irish Chamber Orchestra, with a programme that included Vivaldi's Four Seasons and Piazzolla's The Four Seasons of Buenos Aires. In August, the leader of the Irish Chamber Orchestra, Catherine Hunke, joined Kay Sheehy to talk about the programme and their approach of introducing each piece of music with an explanation which may have come directly from the composers themselves.
Well, that's in the Vivaldi, because Vivaldi actually wrote, well, we don't know if it was definitely him, but very likely Vivaldi wrote short sonnets that go with each of the four seasons. And I always think it's a dreadful shame that the orchestra know, for example, that this bit is somebody who's drunk, or this bit is people having a party, or this is where they fall asleep. But the audience should know that, surely, as well. Otherwise, it's like an in-joke. So then I will ask a colleague, Una Kyo, in the orchestra, is going to do it for us. She has a beautiful speaking voice. She will just say the bit of the sonnet that's relevant before we play each movement, so people will know if we're having a snowball fight or having a snooze. That's the idea.
Oh, how exciting. And does she do the same with the Piazzolla? Is there an introduction?
No, the Piazzolla is... It doesn't have anything written next to it, but we tend to give a signal to the audience so that they know. And I'm not even going to say what that signal is for people that might be there.
We give a signal so that they
know which season it is.
Oh, very good. Or I thought it might be just a toe-tapping thing. So you made a CD of this music. So it was Piazzolla music and Schubert music.
Yeah, and a piece by Schnitker, which is kind of theatrical, quirky piece that we put on there as well. So we did record these Piazzolla pieces. So we know them inside out.
Oh, right. And that was recorded in because you said you were working on that during lockdown, but it was recorded pre-lockdown in the autumn of 2019.
Right.
And then
that was recorded before. Yeah, but during lockdown, it was released. And that was lovely, because it received great reviews, and we got 5 stars for ourselves in BBC Music Magazine, which was just the boost we needed when we weren't playing at all. you know, it's a very strange feeling to get a good review when you're not playing.
Indeed, but
it's
great thing
for
to get.
Morale, of course.
And what about you yourself? You live in Killaloe. What was lockdown like for a musician who's used to playing with other people? I mean, obviously you can still play the violin, but did you find it difficult?
Yeah, for the first little while, I felt very grateful to be living in such a beautiful place, and I felt grateful to have a bit of a rest, to be honest. Because it's been quite a roller coaster of, you know, being a working mum as well. It's full on. And then, so having a rest, having time with my children, and I play music with them. My older son, Carl, is a lovely musician himself on piano and bassoon. So we play together. So we were busy at home making music, I suppose.
Well,
but after about 3 months, that I started to miss... making music with an audience, like an ache, because something happens between audience and musicians that we can't even put our finger on. It's that wonderful, I can't even describe it. That I suppose that's why we don't try. But that's what I miss, is that thing that happens in a live space. It's so important. And of course, it's so what we all need right now, because life can feel a bit bleak at times. So I would say that the arts are no luxury item right now.
Would you like to introduce Spring by Piazzolla, Catherine?
Yeah. So this excerpt from Spring, it's the last bit of Spring, and you'll hear all the moods. Actually, you hear the. I think that the slow bit of this is first love. That's what I think of when I play this, and then the end is insane. It's the bit I have to practice every day. It's insane. You'll hear why.
Spring by Astor Piazzolla, performed by Catherine Hunke, who led the Irish Chamber Orchestra in an outdoor performance in August of this year at the Kilkenny Arts Festival. Stay with us for more on this Arena Music special after these. Welcome back to Arena, where tonight we're looking at some of the best music featured on the show this year. Don Black is a legend in British songwriting. Winning an Oscar at the age of 27 for the theme tune to the movie Born Free, he went on to pen the lyrics to some of the most memorable James Bond themes in the history of the franchise. He's written the lyrics to the hit musical Sunset Boulevard and has enjoyed a five-decade-long career as one of the most sought-after lyricists in the business. Earlier this year, he published his memoirs, The Sanest Guy in the Room. When he joined us on Arena in August, I asked him about a story which has done the rounds about Shirley Bassey and her recording of his lyrics to the Bond theme Diamonds Are Forever. Specifically, what did composer John Barry say to Shirley Bassey about her vocal delivery of those iconic lyrics?
Well, what a lead-in. she didn't know how to sing the song or what attitude to have. And he said, just think of a diamond as a penis. That was a Yorkshire accent, sure. And from then on, she sang it with great conviction.
Yeah, I never knew that. The song is now a totally different song. Let's have a listen.
They are all I need to please me. They can stimulate and tease me. Diamonds are forever. Hold one up and then caress it. Touch it, stroke it, and then.
we go. Diamonds Are Forever. Lyrics certainly been listened to by me in a way I have seldom listened to them before today. The writer of those lyrics, Don Black, is with me this evening. Now, you told us the direction that John Barry gave to Shirley Bassey to sing the song. Had he said anything like that to you in regards to writing the lyrics?
Not really. He was a great friend. We were, like glued to each other, great mates. And he was very simple. He just used to say, get on with it. That was his attitude to life. And in a studio with Shirley Bassey or Tom Jones, he couldn't be bothered with what he called a lot of nonsense. Just do it. That's what you're there for. Just do it. And when he gave me his melodies, I just did them. I just wrote the lyrics to them, It's a kind of a language that nothing is said. You just do it.
Yeah. Is the language of writing a lyric for a song that's going to be in a film or part of a film, is that very different from the way you might approach a song that's not part of a film, that's just a standalone?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I've done so many films, but they should, have an echo of what the movie's about. Mm. Like To Sir With Love, is a lovely title, and so that was about a teacher, so obviously you write it like that. If you're writing a pop song, it doesn't have to be. You just have to... It's funny enough, it's harder to write a pop song because you have no scenario. There's no backstory. But if it's about... If you've got to write a song called Thunderball or Man with a Golden Gun, you've got to start.
And would you have seen rushes of the movies at this stage? Would you want to see where it's going to fit into the scene, or is it going to be in the opening credits? How much of that knowledge do you need to have to approach the lyrics properly?
Well, I hate to to tell you that none at all, really, none at all, because I always say to the director, what's it about, the film? And I love their answer to be, very compressed and concise. And it's like on Born Free, Carl Foreman said, it's about a lion, who they tame, and then he's set off into the wild. That's all I need to know. With To Sir With Love, they said it's about a teacher, and he works in the, a black teacher who works in the East End of London, and the kids are really horrible to him, but they end up loving him. And that's all a sentence, but I don't have to read the script.
To get there.
I have to make sure the song sings, which is hard to explain to people, but a song needs breath around it and clarity. And it's very important. A lot of people don't understand that's one thing John Barry always want. You can have a clunky lyric and it kills the magic.
Don Black, legendary lyricist, speaking to us on Arena in August of this year. He told us about his approach to lyric writing and spoke about his memoir, The Sanest Guy in the Room. That's almost it for this special look back at the best of music on Arena during 2020. Let's hope that over the course of 2021, we get to see many of these artists back in their natural environment, performing on stage to packed houses. But to finish tonight, let's take it back home, and once again, a programme from August of this year. One of the most acclaimed Irish musical acts of recent years, Lancum, joined Kay Sheehy in studio ahead of a special one-off event taking place at the Abbey Theatre. Their Abbey show was called A National Disgrace, and it took its inspiration from the 1926 premiere at the Abbey of Sean O'Casey's The Plough and the Stars. The play featured themes of prostitution and wasn't shy of some blasphemy and profanity. But William Butler Yeats, reacting to the indignation of the audience, took to the Abbey stage to say to them, "You have disgraced yourselves once again." During the interview, Kay discussed with Lancum band members Rady Pete and Dara Lynch the unique role of art in standing up to authority.
Yeah, I think that's another way of looking at that story, is like it's to do with the power of art, And that's just a negative reaction. But if you're provoking people, if you're inciting people to riot just with a play, then I would say you've written a fairly good play. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. And do you think that that idea of, you know, as Yeats went on there and tried to defend Sean O'Casey's right to write these plays about the very people that were living in Dublin City at the time, do you think that what he was doing was something that we need to do today to defend that artistic vision, to defend against all kinds of negative reaction?
Well, I think that you should be able to honestly write whatever, you know, whatever art form you're working in. You need to be able to be honest and write what you actually want to write and express what you actually want to express. And I think that being, you know, curtailed by norms of the day or maybe, you know, manners of the day is probably not a good idea during any time in history.
Apparently it was almost curtailed by subsidies from the government. Apparently the board of the Abbey at the time had a discussion and somebody was saying maybe we shouldn't put this play on as it is because the subsidies we get from the government might be stopped because it's so offensive. And Lady Gregory apparently turned around and said, given the choice between the subsidy and our freedom, I'm going to choose our freedom.
And then finishing the interview, Kay asked Rady about putting the music together for this special Abbey show, a national disgrace.
Well, I think we always, part of the way we try put together music is we are trying to create worlds, you know what I mean? Sort of audio worlds that you go into and you hopefully will get kind of some internal imagery from it. But it's meant to be its own world, basically. So this is just a more extended version of that. It's a more fully fledged other world.
And the music then, is it the music of The Livelong Day or will it sound a little different? Have you done anything with that, Dara?
We're going to have some of the songs will be from The Livelong Day. Some will be from the previous two albums before that. But we've kind of arranged it in such a way with Spud, John Spud Murphy, who's our producer, sound engineer. In a way that the songs are going to, basically the concert will be in two halves and it'll be, all the songs will be connected by various kind of sound pieces and dronescapes, and we've kind of constructed it in such a way so you go in the whole first half, all the songs stream into one another, and then there's the interval and you kind of go wander off into a magical mystery world adventure, and then you come back for the second half of the gig again.
Well, look, we can't talk about The Livelong Day without playing The Wild Rover, I think, to bring us into that wonderful Lancome world. Wild
Lancome with Wild Rover ending tonight's Arena Music Special.